Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Mario Ritter, Katie Weaver, and Anne Ball. Later in the program, we will tell you what's trending today, and Jill Robbins and John Russell will give us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
The power outage at Delta Airlines this week took down computers and stranded thousands of travelers from New York to Tokyo. It was just the latest in a series of computer-related issues that have disrupted other U.S. airlines. Delta said it canceled about 900 flights Monday out of a total of 6,000 worldwide. Nearly 800 were canceled Tuesday, and hundreds more were delayed. By Wednesday, most flights had resumed, although Delta said it expected about 100 more cancellations. Delta is investigating the outage, which hit the airline's computer systems early Monday in Atlanta, Georgia. The company said after power was lost, some critical systems and network equipment didn't switch to backup as they were supposed to. In a video message posted online, Delta CEO Ed Bastian apologized to passengers for the shutdown. Bastian noted that over the last 3 years, Delta had spent hundreds of millions of dollars on technology upgrades. He said the upgrades included backup system improvements intended to prevent what happened this week. The operations center that lost power monitors all of Delta's worldwide flights. It also keeps track of individual planes, crew and passengers, and operates sales and ticketing. Dr. Ahmed Abdelghani is an associate professor of operations management at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, Florida. He said computer outages are significant because they affect all airline operations and require a complete reset of the system. Martin Lebicki is a professor at the U.S. Naval Academy and an adjunct professor at the Pardee Rand Graduate School. He specializes in information technology and security issues. He said one of the main reasons backup systems fail is because they are not regularly tested. Lebicki said one possible cause of backup failures in both the Delta and Southwest outages could have been a malware infection. This is what investigators determined caused a huge power outage in the northeastern United States in 2003. The malware infection in that case affected a power company's outage warning system. Professor Abdelghani said Delta did a good job informing its customers about the outage and trying to accommodate their needs. But he thinks all the airlines should do more to explain what steps they are taking to avoid future outages. I'm Brian Lynn.
Officials in Laos estimate that the country has about 15,000 people who have been injured by unexploded ordnance, also called UXO. The ordnance landed in the countryside but failed to explode over 40 years ago. They were dropped as part of a secret American bombing campaign during the Vietnam War. Today, there are few support services available in Laos for people injured by the bombs. One of those people is Hung Pamachok. He was severely hurt one day in 2004. He and two friends went out into the countryside to look for scrap metal to supplement their family's earnings. They found a piece of metal partly buried in the ground. The three recognized it as a piece of an old bomb casing. They thought it was no longer dangerous. Instead, it was a live cluster bomb, known in Laos as a bommy. The device exploded. Bomb shrapnel ripped through Hung's body and those of his two friends. They were killed. Hung was blinded in one eye and lost both his lower arms. Now his wife depends on the support of neighbors to help with the family's rice field. His eldest daughter spends much of her time caring for the needs of her disabled father. A lack of money means most survivors do not get the medical treatment they need. Many lack disability services like physical therapy, mental health support, prosthetic equipment, and job training. It is difficult for families affected by unexploded ordnance. These families have to care for a parent or child while trying to work and earn a living. Laos is one of the poorest countries in Southeast Asia. Most of the population lives in rural areas, making it more difficult to provide assistance. Colette McInerney is with World Education, a U.S.-based group that provides training and assistance for teachers and schools. It is one of the largest of the few aid providers in Laos. There are still people that fall through the gaps that we don't hear about until many years after their accident, said McInerney. World Education has enough money to support just 250 survivors a year. McInerney says there is a need for more non-governmental organizations and non-profit groups. The Laotian government has a plan to deal with the problems of unexploded bombs, but most of the government's energy is currently centered on the work of disarming and clearing the explosives. This effort, too, largely depends on foreign aid. Between 1964 and 1973, the U.S. military dropped more than 2 million tons of bombs within Laos. The campaign was part of a secret operation during the Vietnam War. The goal was to cut off the supply lines of North Vietnamese forces. Some estimates say nearly one-third of the 270 million explosives that were dropped did not explode. Today, more than 40 years after the war, deadly explosives are still found across the mountains and rice fields of Laos's Sheung Kwang province. Next month, Barack Obama will become the first U.S. president to visit Laos while in office. He is to attend a meeting of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations in the capital, Vientiane. The U.S. Embassy in Laos confirmed that Obama plans to announce an increase in financing for UXO groups, but the details have yet to be finalized. The activist group Legacies of War says that the U.S. government gave more than $4 million a year to the UXO cleanup effort in Laos between 1995 and 2015. Most of the money went toward efforts to clear away explosives. Titus Peachy is an official with Legacies of War. He said, U.S. contributions to the UXO sector have increased many-fold over the past 10 years, reaching $19.5 million in 2016. Most of this increase has gone to clearance operations and an improved survey methodology, which will improve the efficiency of the clearance work. Peachy added that the need now is to provide aid for the thousands of people affected by the bombs. He said many of these people will require long-term medical care. I'm Mario Ritter.
Last year, some of the biggest fires in recent history burned through parts of Indonesia. The fires sent huge clouds of smoke across Indonesia and its neighbors. They also produced large amounts of carbon dioxide. Studies have linked increasing carbon dioxide levels to rising temperatures in Earth's atmosphere. For years, Indonesian farmers and businesses have cleared land for agriculture by setting fire to fields and undeveloped areas. This year's fire season is to begin soon. But measures to limit the burning are now in place. One of Indonesia's top exports and most popular agricultural products is palm oil. It is used in snack foods and cosmetics. Palm trees grow mainly in what was once peatland, wet areas where dead organic material is plentiful. Peatland was dried for agriculture in the quickest way possible, illegal draining and burning of the land. This kind of farming was responsible for some of the worst fires in history. The fires created clouds so large they spread into neighboring countries. Such fires can release more carbon dioxide than the amount produced in the entire United States. Woro Supatina directs the Network for Riau Forest Rescue, a non-governmental organization on the island of Sumatra. Her group studies forest fires and their destruction through satellite information and reports by members.
Dry peatland has become the gasoline for any triggers for the fires. Riau province has lost around 5 million hectares of natural forest. And now, currently, we only have 1.6 million of natural forest that from 7 million that we have in late of 80s.
This year, scientists are blaming the weather event called El Niño for reduced rainfall and drier than normal conditions across Indonesia. But for the first time, policing efforts have stopped the fires on large farms, known as plantations. Edward Sanger is the head of the National Disaster Management Authority in Riau. He said his government agency is prepared to control the burning.
dan tentu dengan apabila memang ada.
We have already made a commitment that what had happened in the past years will not happen again.
Communities across Indonesia have developed different ways to prevent and fight fires. Some are blocking waterways once used to drain water from the land. This helps to reduce the risk of fire. Other communities have their own fire departments or firefighters. And some farmers have stopped growing palm trees and instead are planting different crops. With the dangerous fire season soon to begin, these efforts and others will be put to the test. I'm Katie Weaver.
Researchers say the Earth had much more oxygen nearly a billion years ago than scientific experts thought. That claim could change theories about how life developed on our planet. The claim came from researchers at Brock University in Canada. They wanted to measure the levels of oxygen in the Earth's atmosphere nearly a billion years ago. To do this, the researchers developed a way to study small air bubbles trapped in ancient salt crystals. There was a lot of debate as to what the oxygen content was 800 million or more years ago, said Nigel Blamey of Brock University's Department of Earth Sciences. He said the trapped gases showed that the oxygen level was about half of what it is today. In fact, many experts believed that the oxygen level was only about 2% of the atmosphere so long ago. But the new study found that it was almost 11%. Currently, oxygen is about 21% of the atmosphere. The Canadian researchers used a method to study air bubbles trapped in halite, the natural form of table salt. The researchers say their findings have major effects for theories about how and when life developed. Professor of Earth Sciences Uwe Brand said that higher oxygen levels in the past may turn back the clock when complex life developed. Now, paleobiologists will have reason to go looking for rocks with evidence of these first evolutionary steps, he told the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. I'm Anne Ball.
This is what's trending today. Fu Yuanhui is an Olympic swimmer. She is 20 years old and from the Chinese city of Hangzhou. She competed in the 100-meter backstroke event this week in Rio de Janeiro. She finished third in her semifinal swim on August 7th. Shortly after the semifinals, Fu became a trending topic on Chinese social media. A short time later, she became a trending topic around the world. It was not her swimming, however, that made her famous. It was some of the comments she made afterward. A Chinese reporter spoke with Fu after the semifinals. The reporter told her that she swam the race in under 59 seconds. This seemed to shock Fu. She told the reporter that she used mystical powers in her swim. Her shock joy, and honesty won her many friends in China and around the world. People began making GIFs of her excited facial expressions. Fu's fame only grew on August 9th when she competed in the 100-meter backstroke finals. She swam the race in 58.76 seconds, fast enough to earn her a share of the bronze medal. Her comments after the race won Fu even more followers in China and around the world. At first, the swimmer said she does not think she won a medal. Fu started to say, even though she did not win a medal, when the reporter corrected her. "But you got a medal. You are third," the reporter said. Fu looked around in shock. "I didn't know." She then said, "Well, then I think that's not bad at all." Her reaction and personality have made Fu Yuanhui one of China's and the world's favorite Olympians. And that's what's trending today. I'm Mernoush Karamian-Ainsworth.
From VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. In a previous Everyday Grammar story, we discussed two common sentence patterns using the word be. This week, we are going to give you more information about another common pattern in English, the linking verb pattern. To get you started with linking verb patterns, consider this passage from a story called The Diamond as Big as the Ritz by the American author F. Scott Fitzgerald.
As he approached the end, his sentences became broken, became short and uncertain, and his body seemed tense, seemed strained to catch the slightest pressure or whisper of life in the spaces around him.
By the end of this story, you will be able to recognize one major linking verb pattern that Fitzgerald uses many times in this sentence.
Remember, a sentence has a subject and a predicate. A clause has a subject and a predicate, too. The predicate is the verb phrase. It has a main verb, such as a linking verb, and other words, such as a subject complement, that give more information about it. When you capitalize the first word of a clause and put a period at the end of it, a clause becomes a sentence. Keep this idea in mind because it will help you understand sentences that use several clauses.
In the book Rhetorical Grammar, Martha Kohn says that the term linking verbs applies to verbs that are completed by a subject complement, the adjective or noun phrase that describes the subject. Many grammar experts consider the verb be to be a linking verb, but Kohn says be verb patterns are sometimes different from other linking verb patterns. This is because adverbial information often follows be verbs, such as in the following sentence.
My sister is at the store.
In this case, an adverbial structure, a prepositional phrase, tells about the location of the subject, my sister. This be pattern is one we discussed in a previous Everyday Grammar story. Subject plus be plus adverbial. Be plus adverbial make up the predicate. In contrast, the usual linking verb structure is this. Subject plus linking verb plus subject complement. The linking verb plus subject complement make up the predicate.
Some of the most common linking verbs are verbs of the senses. They include taste, smell, feel, look, and sound. These verbs often link an adjective to a subject. For example, consider these memorable lines from Dirty Harry, a famous American film. Clint Eastwood, the actor who plays the character of Dirty Harry, says,
"You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?"
In the sentence, "Do I feel lucky?" the adjective lucky acts as the subject complement. It describes the subject, I. If you were to answer the question, you might say this, "Yes, I feel lucky."
Verbs of the senses are not the only linking verbs. Two other common examples of linking verbs are remain and become. These verbs often link a noun or noun phrase to a subject. Consider the opening lines from Casablanca, another classic American film.
"With the coming of the Second World War, many eyes in imprisoned Europe turned hopefully, or desperately, toward the freedom of the Americas. Lisbon became the great embarkation point."
In the second sentence, "Lisbon became the great embarkation point," you can see the basic linking verb pattern, even though the subject complement has several words. Lisbon is the subject of the sentence. The predicate has the linking verb became, as well as the noun phrase, "the great embarkation point."
Aside from the verbs of the senses and become and remain, there are three other common linking verbs. They are prove, seem, and appear. Like other linking verbs, these verbs link an adjective or noun phrase to the subject. All these verbs use the same basic pattern: subject plus linking verb plus subject complement.
Think back to this passage from The Diamond as Big as the Ritz.
"As he approached the end, his sentences became broken, became short and uncertain, and his body seemed tense, seemed strained to catch the slightest pressure or whisper of life in the spaces around him."
Fitzgerald uses some phrases that do not fit into the linking verb pattern, but if you look closely, you will see that he uses the subject plus linking verb plus subject complement pattern in the sentence. Consider these clauses.
His sentences became broken.
Fitzgerald then repeats the linking verb pattern, but does not say the subject. The repeated subject is understood.
His sentences became short and uncertain. His body seemed tense. His body seemed strained.
This sentence contains other structures that are more complicated than the basic linking verb pattern, but you can still see that these basic patterns can serve as the starting point for very long, complicated sentences.
Learning how to use linking verb patterns will help you improve your writing. You can think about creative ways to use them, or you can learn to recognize when you use them too often. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.